Hi, everyone. Welcome to my podcast, where I explore the science of health, human performance, and ultimate potential. My name is Dr. Greg Wells, and I'm a scientist with a PhD in human physiology. I have served as a professor in kinesiology at the University of Toronto and as a scientist in translational medicine at SickKids Hospital. I've also worked with dozens of Olympic-level athletes through the Canadian Sports Centre Network. In this podcast, I do my best to take complex research and make it understandable and actionable for you to improve your health and well-being and perform to your true potential at whatever it is that you care about the most. In each show, I chat with leading experts in the field of productivity, sleep, nutrition, physiology, and psychology, as well as some of the most exceptional performers across all disciplines. Together, we explore the amplifiers that propel us towards high performance and overcome the obstacles that challenge us. Ultimately, I want to share 1% gains that can make a massive difference in your life. Thank you for listening in, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. Let me know your thoughts and comments on social at Dr. Greg Wells. All right, let's dive in. Hey everyone, today we get to talk to Dr. Robin Hanley Defoe. Robin's writing and speaking interests focus on resiliency and wellness, including topics such as the intersections of stress, optimal challenge, navigating change, and self-identity in her own backyard and around the world. She has worked within post-secondary education in a variety of roles, bringing wise practices for professional development, research, learning, and authentic change. Robin is committed to finding innovative solutions for creating positive learning relationships and environments for students, teachers, families, and organizations. Robin would be the first person to tell you that she's still navigating her way through all the research and literature, talking with people and exploring with the intention of developing a deeper understanding of resiliency. Robin's refreshing approach looks at resiliency from multiple vantage points with the aim of being fully accessible to everyone. Regardless of your background or prior knowledge, Robin's work is relatable, approachable, and rooted in honest, personal reflection and humor. She brings you along with the research-informed best practices that you can adapt and adopt in your own life. She lives in Central Ontario with her husband and three amazing children who remind her each day that she still has a lot to learn about everything like we all do, which is exactly why we're super psyched to have Dr. Robin back on the show to talk about resiliency, wellness, and the tactics that we can use to improve those factors on a daily basis. All right, let's dive into the conversation with Dr. Robin Hanley Defoe.
Dr. Robin, welcome back. It's great to have you on the show again.
Thank you, Dr. Greg. I was so excited for our time together today.
So, new book, congratulations, super psyched. And it's called Stress Wisely, which is not something that we would normally sort of think about. It, like, you know, stress badly, stress too much, stress overwhelm, like all of those sorts of things. But you've got a new take on it. So tell us about the new book.
Well, first of all, thank you, Dr. Greg, for this chance to connect with you and your listeners. So the kind of origin story behind Stress Wisely was just this recognition that stress is inherent to the human condition. We will always be under a certain element of stress. It's in our very nature. It's how our bodies and our brains work. And again, as you just mentioned in your kind of opening, it's like, yeah, we spend so much energy trying to like stress in terms of manage it, try to reduce it, trying to like kind of work against it. And one of the things that really became obvious, I guess, to say to me during the last wee while was that if we could make stress our ally and we could actually work with our nervous systems, I felt as though that was this like game changer where if stress wasn't our enemy, yet it was our ally, how that could essentially make us unstoppable to meet the challenges of today's world.
It's interesting, right? The idea of stress as an ally. That's like stress is your friend. So stress is something that helps you, which of course it does. When you look at the physiology of it, there's a short-term negative impact, but actually that's what stimulates growth and positive adaptation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's the piece where I really felt was like that was missing in a lot of our conversations about stress was this idea that, you know, we know on a physiological level, it does absolutely allow us to level up, to skill up, to like push ourselves beyond that growth zone and, or into that growth zone, but beyond that comfort zone. Yet so many persons would view it as, again, this is the obstacle. And again, also one of the things that I saw so often is people would get so discouraged because they would make some really great choices, build some beautiful habits, but then stress would show up again, as it inevitably will. And then they would regress back back to some of those patterns because they thought that they lost. They thought that, you know, it doesn't matter what I do, I'm going to always kind of be on my heels trying to catch up, versus essentially the whole kind of premise about Stress Wisely is like to learn about our stress system in a really personal way and then set it up again to set us up for success. So when we do have those seasons that are heavier, we already have a full arsenal of knowing, what do I have to do? What's my next right move? And how can I maintain and sustain the benefits of all these wellness practices that we put into place?
You said that stress is personal. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting because I know that certainly what stresses me out doesn't bother Judith. Judith's my wife, or anyone's listening who doesn't know that already. But and vice versa, something that, you know, sparks Judith. And I'm like, yeah, well, whatever, carrying on. And so when you say that stress is personal, explain what that means. Like, how is it that stress is so different for all of us as an experience?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dr. Greg. So on like the biological level, obviously it's very universal. We know that we all have the same systems essentially we're working with, where we're going to get stress responses and stress reactions. Where it becomes really personal are what activates or triggers those stress systems. And our lived experience essentially has created this blueprint within each and every one of us that actually creates essentially these like little buttons, which become our thresholds or our points in which we can activate a deeper stress reaction. So you're absolutely right. What stresses you out might be different than what might stress out Judith. And same in our household, I have different points and stressors. And the other idea is that we also have this threshold of how we react once we have had a certain dosage or frequency of dosage of stressings. And what I mean by that is, you know, one or two things on their own, probably not a big deal. But when we have that cumulative effect where that stress just keeps growing and compounding, we cross that threshold, then all of a sudden we know we're more vulnerable to some of those negative impacts of stress.
You and I did a session last week and it was epic to hang out with you and present together. And it was so much fun as always. I learned something whenever I watch and listen to you speak, and you talked about fight or flight, but then you also mentioned freeze or fawn. And it was super interesting to me that our stress responses could include either a fight or flight response, which I'm sure a lot of people are probably familiar with or have heard about before.
Yeah.
But the fact that we can also have this freeze and fawn I was super curious about that. And I think my listeners might be interested in that as well. So any insights on that would be super brilliant.
Of course. Well, just so you know, I love getting to present with you as well. That was a highlight of my week too. So yes, we talk a lot about the fight or flight. When we think of our nervous system, that's kind of what most of us go to, because we're either going to like flee or like run away from that threat, or we're going to like man up like toe to toe against that threat and fight our way out of that situation. And one of the things that we saw when we dived into our research was that the fight or flight was actually not as prevalent as to the other secondary response systems, which was that fawning or that freezing. Now, freezing effect, I think a lot of people might be familiar, where essentially, like, let's say you're in a meeting and somebody asks you a question and like you can't even string a sentence together. Like you almost have this like pause where it's just like, I don't even know what to say, deer in the headlights type look. Yet when you drive home or perhaps later in the night, you have that moment where you're like, oh, I should have said this, or I could have done this. Or perhaps you are in a situation where you're feeling really activated and you didn't make your best choice. And you had that moment, you're like, why did I do that? I wish I could have done this differently. So that's that freezing response. Now, the other secondary system is the fawning. And the fawning is what we're seeing, that the highest levels of fawning we've ever seen before, which is essentially the nervous system chooses to placate. So essentially we just kind of roll over, so to speak. We just take it. We don't rock the boat. We don't want to be difficult. And what we're seeing there is that this system is essentially why so many of us are experiencing burnout, because we just keep taking more and more on our plates or those platters at this point. And even though we know this isn't in our best interest, it doesn't align with our long-term goals, it gets us out of the immediate discomfort, for example, of having to say no, or having to kind of turn down assignments, or, you know, maybe have those difficult conversations. Instead, we just basically suck it up. Now, why that is, I think, quite dangerous in the long term is the fact that that's where we're going to start to get this feeling of like resentment to our own lives, where all of a sudden we're going to start to resent it. We're going to resent our, perhaps even our loved ones or our places of employment, because eventually something has to give. And when you've kind of sold yourself out repeatedly, you're going to start to experience like a lot of like aggression. And that's what we really want to be careful about. And we're seeing it in really high rates right now.
Yeah, it's interesting that when we are stressed out, what we need to do is to do less and to recover and regenerate. Yet there's this response that we have where we just give up and take on more and don't rock the boat. You just can't handle it anymore. And you end up in the exact opposite place of where you want it to be. Intentionally, you had this intention of doing all the right things, yet you end up with something completely different.
Absolutely. And I think there's only so long that our like psychology can override our biology to then when our biology gives up. And that's when we get sick. And that's when we just all of a sudden burn ourselves out. So I think we try to outthink stress, right? We're just like, okay, well, if I can just, you know, for example, you know, if we're ever in that position where it's like, sure, I could delegate, yet it's just easier for me to do it myself versus explain to somebody else how to do it. And we just keep doing that over and over and over again. Our psychology eventually is going to fail because our physiology is going to say no more. And that's, again, when we start to get sick and we start to just really experience that, you know, that buildup of that prolonged or that chronic stress that we see people are experiencing so much right now.
How do we make that shift then? So we are in this position. So many of us are. There's overwhelm, there's burnout, there's anxiety, all these sorts of significant challenges to us. How do we now start to make the shift? How do we start to put the oxygen mask on ourselves? As you say, it's not selfish, it's science, right? Like, how do we begin to give ourselves permission to feel better again?
Yeah, again, a great question, Dr. Greg. And as a starting point, I really encourage people just like, we just have to pause. Like we actually have to pull ourselves out of autopilot, pause to have that kind of moment just to do that building of that self-awareness and to like really ask yourself. And it could be a pretty difficult conversation with yourself to say like, is this actually working? Is this actually the life I'm choosing? Because living the dream shouldn't kill you. Right? That's something that I say so often, living the dream ought not to be your death of you. And so a lot of real high performers, some really effective persons, again, on the surface are totally living the dream, right? Like they have privilege, they have opportunities, and it's killing them. So the question is building that self-awareness with asking yourself, is this really working? And then the other question I love to follow up with that is like, when do you feel the most effective in your life? Like, when are you the most effective? And there's a really good chance, especially if we're feeling some of those symptoms of burnout, we're not building our schedules or building our days in such a way, Dr. Greg, that is in alignment with when we feel the most effective. So the reason we start with that exercise of those two questions is because what we want to do is start working towards that, like that visual kind of idea of what it is that I am striving for. So we have to get that picture in our foremind about like, this is what I actually want to be feeling. This is how I want to be showing up for my family, how I want to be showing up for my work in that really effective way. And then we start to create or scaffold practices in our day that allows that to be the option, that allows that to be like the inevitable outcome that if I do these habits well, I will be able to have that desired state of being. And that's a starting point.
Let's say we do this analysis mm-hmm. and we realize that the way that we're working isn't working. Mm-hmm. We know that there is a problem. I'm living the dream, but I'm completely burned out. And we need to make a change specifically around how we are structuring our days. I've been curious about this idea of ultradian rhythms where we have energy at certain times that is best directed towards certain things. How do we then get control of our schedules such that we can allocate our attention and energy towards the things that are most important to us at the times when we are best able to do them?
Yeah, I love that idea and that question. So for me, I'm a big advocate of looking at our days in quarters. And that's probably been the biggest game changer with the persons that I support and including my own practices, where instead of looking at a day as like a full day, which is like gigantic. Like there's so many things outside of your control on any given day. What I like to think about is my day and quarter. So I have my morning quarter, I have my midday quarter, I have my afternoon quarter, and I have my evening quarter. So when I work with it, so for example, let's say like one of my quarters got off, like let's just say like I had a difficult conversation or something really went off course. Okay, so that was in one of the quarters. That still means three out of the four or 75% of the day, like I was still able to meet some of my goals and stay on task. So instead of this like overgeneralization of like today was a good day and I was on point or a bad day and I was off point, I like to think of like, okay, so the first quarter didn't go so hot, but I still have three more. So then that way I can do some course correction within the day itself. And I make sure that each of those quarters have even just a wee little recovering window. Now that might be a walk outside of my lunch hour. That could be an early morning kind of walk before the day gets away from me, or that kind of decompression at the end of the day where we do some breath work, some reflection, where we make the invisible visible. So we write some of that stuff out just to kind of get it out of our head. But when we start viewing our day as at quarters, you're going to realize you have so much more time than you think you do.
You're flying all over the world. You have a new book out. You're speaking, you are consulting, you are absolutely on fire at the moment. And I'm so proud of you and so happy that you're doing so well. And I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, like, how does she do this? Like, it's fair enough, like, wow. Just, you know, follow Dr. Robin on Instagram to get a sense of just like the pace of what it is that you're doing. What's working for you? Like, let's just be absolutely tactical, absolutely real. You've got a busy life. What are you doing right now that's working?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for that kind feedback. I have a very, as our friend, our mutual friend, Peter Katz would say, I have a very full day, a full life, and there's lots of moving parts. So for me, it's all about my non-negotiables, Dr. Greg, which is my family, right? So as long as my family are okay, with our three teenagers there, like as long as they're okay, their needs are met, they're looked after, they're in a healthy place, I have all this spaciousness in my days where I can tackle some of these big audacious goals that I'm working towards in my professional life. So for me, it's the non-negotiable of my family. One of the strategies also is with the travel is that I'm never more than one flight away home. So if anyone needs me, I'm never more than one flight away home is a practice I try to use. And that way I just know that, yes, you know, we have all these kind of competing demands on everyone's schedule in our household. But as long as I know that my home team is okay and I can get to them if they need me, I then again have that spaciousness to be able to do what I get to do. I also am super fortunate that I have a very supportive husband who is so good at holding down the fort. Like he is the best at like holding down home team, making sure everybody's okay. So I can't do this without my home team. The second thing that I think that really helps with me doing what I get to do is really getting buy-in from the kids that this is for, like, this is the work that mom does. And I'm doing this because this is how it contributes to how I want to show up in the world, how I want to be of service. And it also contributes to the lifestyle these kids get to be accustomed to. So I don't keep it from them. Like I let them know, like, this is part of what I get to do. And, you know, this is kind of the season right now where it's really full, especially with this book launch, and there's going to be quieter seasons. So, you know, those are that dialogue that it's really important to get enrollment from the kids that this isn't, there's no mom guilt here, because essentially we've had the conversations. I have permission with that kind of conversation as a home team that we're in this together. So I think that's essentially the big one. Now, outside of the family dynamic, which really contributes is having really, really committed, structured routines that it doesn't matter where I am in the world, my morning routine is going to look exactly the same. And so whenever possible, and I can't always wake up at the same time because of time zones, but I know what I do within the first 5 minutes of waking up, which means I find a way to get outside. So again, it could be raining, it could be cold, but the first thing I do is get ready and I just get outside, even just in the hoodie and the baseball cap, right? Like it's not pretty, but I just know that if I start with nature outdoors, even if it's concrete jungle, it doesn't matter because I get outside. And then when I'm using that time in the morning, that's when I do the intention setting of what it is that, you know, I need to do today. How do I want to do this? So that 30 minutes outdoors is the key for me being able to do what I get to do.
How important are your morning intentions and affirmations? What sort of a difference do you feel when you do that practice? I agree with you with getting outside. It makes all the difference in the world. Yeah. Sunlight into the eyes, first thing in the morning, massively important, resets your brain, enables you to fall asleep at night, all that stuff. intentions and affirmations are something that I'm curious about. So how important is that to you?
It's very important, Dr. Greg, because again, I think it sets the mindset and the tone for your day. And again, one of the ones, and again, came across from, I learned from Peter Katz again, was this idea about like starting my day with that recognition that, you know, my life is special and that everything I get to do is a privilege. It's a special opportunity. When I start from that place of just deep gratitude, you know, even just that soon as I get outside, just that pause and being like, wow, what I get to do is very special. And that way I meet this life with a reverence and an appreciation that really sets the mindset of what comes my way. I want to make sure I have that discipline of my mind that I'm not going to get off track by some negativity or that noise. It's like, no, yeah, like just because it's a special life doesn't mean it's not complicated, but I'm not going to get tied in with that noise. So again, it just really helps me have that laser focus on what matters most. So then that way I can make what matters most matter most.
Love it. You have a new podcast with Peter, who you've mentioned a number of times. Tell us about that.
Oh my goodness. We are having so much fun with that. The podcast is called In Time. And the whole kind of origin story there was just capturing these moments because we had, you know, both of us were reflecting that we have these really cool stories, these adventures, yet, you know, we don't always get a chance to like share that with other people or they don't get kind of see some of that behind the scenes. So it's just this drop in for deep conversation from the perspective of a scientist and a musician, a creative, an artist, and just kind of this like exploration of big ideas and thoughts and feelings. So we've been able to participate with that. And again, we just drop in time together to have these conversations. And what I love so much about it, Dr. Greg, is it's not prescribed in any way. It's just this open 30 minutes of dialogue. And that feeling of being in a moment with someone where there's like no agenda, like it's literally just showing up for one another. It has created, again, this spaciousness for some of those new ideas and thoughts and feelings to come to the surface. So I think it really speaks to the power of like real conversation and the fact that we're not meant to do any of this, Dr. Greg, alone. We're not meant to do this alone. We need one another to build, again, that allyship. And that's something even with your listeners that you're doing is you're creating conversations, sharing language, letting people know how to discern all these big ideas out there when it comes to physiology and health. And again, these are just such important conversations that we can contribute to some positivity into that pretty unwell world.
Yeah, and we certainly need a lot more positivity into this world at the moment. And you're sharing a ton of that. And if people want to find out more about you and what you're up to and connect with you online, where can they do so?
Best place to do it is drrobin.ca, and that's Dr. D-R Robin with an E, R-O-B-Y-N-E.ca.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's great to see you. Thanks for everything that you do. Thanks for the new book. Thanks for the podcast. You're awesome. And we will talk to you again really soon.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Greg. Be well. See you later.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Dr. Greg Wells podcast. If you found this show informative and helpful, check out my blog at drgregwells.com for additional insights and resources on health and human performance. I update the blog a couple times a month. To stay up to date on the latest tips, articles, and videos, be sure to follow me on social at Dr. Greg Wells. My goal on social is to keep your health and wellness and positivity at the forefront of your mind, and so I would be thrilled to connect with you there. If you found this episode helpful, please consider subscribing to the podcast. That helps us out a ton. And leave a review. Your feedback is greatly appreciated and helps me to continue to produce valuable content that's relevant to all of you. Please feel free to share this episode with your friends and community. That helps a ton as well. And that brings this week's show to an end. I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Have a great week, everyone.